Thank you all for coming today. I was asked to give a presentation on the management challenges to managing sport fisheries in Central Alaska, as well as highlight the management measures that were taken to provide sport fishing opportunity while trying to meet escapement needs in Central Alaska area. It wasn't until after I agreed to do this presentation that I was told that I had 10 minutes to capture all that. Unfortunately, 10 minutes isn't nearly enough time to adequately describe all the meetings, the thought process, the data, the anguish, and the second guessing that managers do amongst themselves throughout the season. So with that in mind, the area within Central Alaska that I'm going to focus my presentation on is going to be in Cook Inlet. And Chinook salmon run abundance information for the streams in Cook Inlet, it varies throughout the area. And within Lower Cook Inlet that you see here on the screen, the department operates a weir on the Anchor River, a weir on the Neilchik River, and then we also fly an aerial survey via helicopter for Deep Creek. In the northern Kenai Peninsula management area, we operate a weir that's located on Crooked Creek, a tributary to the Kasiluoff River. We operate a sonar project on the Kenai River, in which we're currently transitioning from a split-beam sonar project to the newer Ditson and Ares technology. Over on west side of Cook Inlet, we do aerial surveys for Chewitna River, Theodore River, and Lewis River. And this year we also added a weir on the Theodore and Lewis Rivers to ground truth the aerial surveys, which we've been conducting there for a number of years. For the Susitna River drainage, we operate a weir on the Deshka River. We operate another weir on the Deception Creek. And we conduct aerial surveys for the majority of the drainage, covering about 18 different streams. We also operate a weir on the Little Susitna River that in the past has been operated to assess coho salmon. And in 2013, we're going to begin assessing Chinook salmon as well, beginning 2013 and beyond. Now, just to give you an idea of the sport fishing effort that's as measured in angler days for the central, south central region, that's represented by the red line. And then the south central region includes Cook Inlet, Prince William Sound, Kodiak, Bristol Bay, and the Alaska Peninsula. And you can see approximately 70% of the angling effort occurs within the south central region. And within the south central region, within Cook Inlet itself, you have about 70% of the angling effort within there is just captured within Cook Inlet. Now, similar to the other slides that you've been seeing, this just represents just one system to kind of give you a picture of what we've been dealing with over the last several decades. You know, this is the Deshka River weir escapements. Now, again, it's not total run, but again, it shows you kind of a general trend that we've been experiencing here that in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, we had low production, and then throughout the early 2000s to the mid-2000s, we had really nice production going on. And then we got down into this low period of productivity that we've been seeing for the last several years. Now, similar to what John talked about, all of the challenges that John mentioned in his talk in challenges to managing the commercial fisheries, those really apply to the sport fishery as well, and I'm sure some of the things that I'm going to talk about also apply to managing the commercial fisheries. But in looking at the challenges of managing the sport fisheries in Cook Inlet, I broke the challenges out into two different categories, the first being primary challenges. And I believe these primary challenges are challenges that managers face in determining what actions we're going to take in order to achieve the escapement while still providing opportunity to the recreational users. And then there's another category that I kind of term the secondary challenges. Now, these, I believe, are factors that complicate our management actions, and attention has to be paid to these challenges because they can really influence the effectiveness of the actions that we choose to take. Now, forecasting is a primary challenge because it really sets the tone for the upcoming season. And the public is making some really critical choices and investments that at least partially by these forecasts. The timeliness of in-season run abundance information plays a real critical part in the effectiveness of our actions. Now, weirs, sonars, towers, you know, they're all tools used to assess the salmon abundance, and they can vary in their effectiveness for management decisions depending upon how close to the fishery that they are. Projects that are a week or more behind the fishery make it much more difficult to restrict or liberalize fisheries while fish are still present within those fisheries. The recent trend in escapements also has an effect on the timing and the severity of the management actions that we take, such as during the early 2000s, we had a period of high productivity going there. Liberalizations occurred earlier and quicker in the season because the risk of being wrong was relatively low. Conversely, facing the last 3 to 4 years of poor escapements, the consequences of not achieving an escapement goal for an additional year becomes more significant to the sustainability. And management is going to consider additional restrictions beyond what we may have taken the previous year, and it's likely that we're going to be quicker to put those in place. Run timing information is vital to making accurate in-season run projections. Now, typically, our management actions will occur near the first quarter point or the midpoint of runs as they occur. And usually those are going to be based on average run timing. But not every run is average run timing. You know, some runs are early and some are late. And so when you're looking at information as you gather it in season, if anything is indicating to us that something may be early, well, then we look at our run projections, and then we may present those as a range of what our projection is around the first quartile. Likewise, if things are looking to be late, we'll present a range that goes from maybe the midpoint of the run to the latest that we've ever seen it. So that kind of affects the decisions that we have, too, because that's varying that projection. What are we going to be at the end of the season? So that's going to vary. And so run time and information is really critical in making those kind of management decisions. Now, secondary challenges are to the in-season sport fishery management. It includes high effort. Now, for Cook Inlet, high efforts, it's due to the proximity to anchorage and the very easily accessible streams that we have in that area. Regulations are becoming more increasingly varied and complex, but that's in recognition that these fisheries are often unique from area to area or even from stream to stream. But these regulations that are tailored to fit each area, it makes it real challenging in determining what course of action to take during the fishing season. Emergency orders tend to be particularly disruptive to recreational users. You know, many have planned trips months or even several years in advance of travel. And the thousands of anglers that are out there, they're less in tune to checking for emergency orders probably prior to going out there fishing. And many of them may be in the middle of trips when these actions take place or are being issued. And then we also have ballooning effects, which also is a challenge for us. And ballooning effects is a term that we apply to the shifting of effort from one area that may be restricted or closed to going to other areas that are still open or maybe less restricted. And it becomes a challenge for management to try and anticipate the changes in the shifting of fishing effort and act appropriately in those surrounding systems. Now here I'll just briefly describe and highlight some of the management actions that the division took during the 2012 fishing season in the Susitna River, the Kenai and Kaseal off-river drainages, and the lower Cook Inlet streams. Now, for each of these areas, I'll just briefly mention actions that may have occurred pre-season and then those that occurred during the season. Now, keep in mind that for all these areas, we had generally experienced the last 3 to 4 years with escapements below or near the low end of the escapement goal. And we were hopeful that 2012 was going to be better than the 2011 season and the 2010 season. In the Susitna River, we had just come off a 2011 run in which only 5 out of 17 salmon escapement goals were met. the preseason actions for this drainage were advantageous because most of the run information that we have for the Susitna River isn't timely. The exception of this is the Deshka River. Now, the Deshka River has a weir on there, and that project provides us with information to provide a pretty reliable forecast, as well as providing us timely in-season information. So we were able to start out in the Deshka River with less restrictions than we had maybe for some of the other areas of the Susitna drainage. Now, area-wide, we reduced the annual limit from 5 king salmon down to 2 king salmon, and we restricted gear to 1 unbaited single-hook artificial lure, except for in the Deshka River, where we were able to continue to allow the use of bait in multiple hooks. In addition, we further restricted Parks Highway streams, which were easily accessible, to catch and release only, and the Little Susitna River to catch and release from Tuesdays through Thursdays. Now, once the season got rolling and it appeared that the runs were starting off worse than even 2011, even if you considered late run timing. So the first in-season action that we took is we closed king fishing on the Little Susitna River, and we prohibited bait on the Deshka River. So we're trying to step things down as we're gathering information. With the run still projecting to be below the escapement goal, we then closed the entire Susitna River drainage for king salmon. Now, at that time, approximately 60% of the run was estimated to have passed the Deshka River weir, and we had expected harvest reductions to range anywhere from 25% on the Deshka River up to 75% on the Talkeetna River, where Chinook salmon were just starting to arrive. Now, on the Kenai and Kisilov Rivers, we didn't initiate any preseason actions for the early run Chinook salmon fishery. We started that fishery out under normal regulations because those regulations are already very restrictive with no bait, one hook, annual limit of 2. And we also have an assessment project that's pretty much below the in-river fishery, so we have timely information there. Our first in-season step-down measure was to limit fishing to catch and release for king salmon that are greater than 20 inches or less than 50 inches. And at the same time, we also had to look at ballooning effects of the Kisilov River, so we prohibited retention of wild king salmon on the river, but still kept the fishery open to the hatchery stocks that are there. Now, around the midpoint of the early run, we were still projecting to be well below our management goals, our objectives there, and so we then closed the Kenai River to king salmon fishing, and we also were anticipating now that the late run is probably going to be similar to every other run that we saw in Cook Inlet around the state, that it's also going to be poor. So we took a preseason action for the late run to start without bait there. Now, once we moved up into July, we carried on the conservative measures for the early run and the upriver. We kept fishing closed in the upriver, but we allowed fishing with no bait in the lower river for the late run fish as they started to move into the river. Near the first quartile of the run, things were still looking well below our management objectives, probably the worst that we've ever seen there since 86. And so we went to catch and release for king salmon greater than 20 inches, less than 50 inches. And we also prohibited retention in the personal use fishery that was there. Now, 9 days later, we reached the average midpoint of the run, and all run projections are still indicating the lowest king run that we've seen. So we closed the king salmon sport fishery on the Kenai and Kisilov Rivers. Now, in the lower Cook Inlet streams, the Anchor River, Nanilchik, and Deep Creek, these are 3-day-only weekend fisheries. So they fish Saturday, Sunday, Monday down there. And Anchor River has 5 weekends in which they can fish, and Deep Creek and Nanilchik are fishing for 3 weekends. Now, we took a preseason action. Anchor River also can fish on Wednesdays, so they have that extra day there. So we took a preseason action on the Anchor River to pull the Wednesday. And there was also, we moved a boundary marker about 1,000 yards downriver. There's a hole that is kings tend to hold up before they go through the weir. So it's a kind of a popular fishing spot. So we closed that one also to kind of slow that fishery down to start with, because we do have a weir there. We do have in-season abundance information. So there was several of the first openers that occurred in those streams were during high water, muddy water events. We all know we had a late breakup here. So that also helped to reduce harvest that was going on in those streams. But then after those first several weekends, the escapements lag into the Anchor River weir. So we ended up pulling bait from the Anchor River on their final two weekends that they had. But then it's still lagging. We're getting towards midpoint in the run again, so we ended up closing the Anchor River for the remainder of the King season, as well as extending restrictions into July when the fisheries open back up to fishing for other species. We continue to prohibit bait in those areas as well because we still had King salmon, protracted run. It was a late run. We also ended up having to restrict the marine harvest that's out there to protect King salmon that are entering the lower Cook Inlet streams, as well as King salmon entering up into the Kenai and Kasiloff rivers. So this was basically just a general overview of the actions that we took. We had 5 emergency orders in the Susitna drainage, 12 in the Kenai and Kasiloff, and ended up with 8 in the lower Cook Inlet streams. Now, throughout the summer, we were continuing trying to employ step-down measures as we gathered more in-season information. And just keep in mind that, you know, this is just a real brief overview of all the work and the challenges that our managers face day to day when we're dealing with these poor runs. And we understand the effect of our actions are going to have on all the users. And it's not easy. And it comes with a lot of thought and a lot of anguish in making these decisions. So, with that, that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. These guys had the biggest challenge of anyone here because they were forced into a 10-minute box. So thanks you guys for doing the best you could with that. We've got time for maybe one or two quick questions from the panel, if there are any. Go ahead, Doug.
Great. Thank you. I guess I was wondering if both presenters could just comment. I mean, you know, we talked about, you know, the broad area of the Yukon and the broad area of Cook Inlet. Are all the runs, or however you would you know, classify runs within those areas, are they all moving in concert with each other? In other words, are they all going down, or are there, you know, islands of, and I'm using islands figuratively, of stocks that are, you know, seem to be maintaining better than maybe some of the others?
No, you're just talking Chinook, not sockeye coho. Excuse me.
Yeah, Chinook, please.
You know, for the central region, Nooshigak kind of stood out as being better than the rest. But when we're looking at the broad area, it appeared that all of them this year were very low abundance, as well as they were probably all were anywhere from 7 to 9 days late as well.
And I guess in the context of the, are you speaking specifically to the Yukon in that question, or AYK region overall?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I was trying to drill down a little bit. You talked about the Yukon, and we talked about Cook Inlet. So I was just trying to figure out, was all of Cook Inlet moving up and down, and are all the stocks or all the runs, or however you want to classify them, in the Yukon, you know, moving in concert?
Yeah, I guess within the Yukon specifically, the breakout of both the Canadian and the U.S. stocks, if we've seen the most dramatic decline or most significant decline, it would be more for those Canadian origin kings. But certainly we're in a lower production regime or realm within the U.S. stocks as well, just not quite as significant as what we've seen on those Canadian stocks within the Yukon.